First, the novel coronavirus isn't the first outbreak to capture much of the world's attention in recent years. There was the Ebola outbreak that affected parts of West Africa between 2014 and 2016, and the Zika virus epidemic that hit Brazil and eventually made its way to the U.S. around the same time. But it turns out there are some big differences between many of the most recent outbreaks and the novel coronavirus. And those differences help explain why the new virus has had such a huge effect around the globe. Kaylee Rogers is a reporter covering politics and technology for 538. She wrote the piece there, Why Did the World Shut Down for COVID-19 But Not Ebola, SARS, or Swine Flu? Kaylee, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, let's look at a couple of these other illnesses. One common thing from our vantage point here in the United States, these are diseases. They looked scary. They were in other countries around the world. We didn't know what to make of them at first. Let's start with Ebola and why this really lethal disease didn't end up having this kind of global impact. Can you start us there, please?
Yeah, sure. So with Ebola, it's really interesting. It's a pretty severe disease. It kills on average about 50% of people who become infected. So that's a really high rate. But the difference is that it's pretty hard to contract. So you have to be dealing with the bodily fluid of an infected person. So their blood or their sweat or their urine, which is really only going to happen if you're in a healthcare setting or if you're dealing with the body of someone who's passed from it. So it's a lot harder to contract. And it's also, you know, the symptoms are really severe, and so they're pretty identifiable. You don't have that asymptomatic transmission like we have with COVID. If somebody had Ebola, you knew it, and you knew how to take the proper precautions to try to avoid the spread.
And this is going to be a running theme, I think, in a lot of what we talk about today, that the identifiability, that you're not really spreading the disease before you have symptoms. That is really a key thing that helped people contain Ebola and some of the other illnesses we're going to talk about, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So the fact that you can spread COVID before you know you have it, when you don't have any symptoms at all, has been a really key and sort of difficult challenge with this outbreak, because it makes it so much harder to track, so much harder to prevent the spread, and it really kind of leaves us with fewer options of what to do, which is why we end up with these lockdowns, right? If you don't know you have it and you're spreading it and it's very infectious, that's a really bad combination.
Then let's look at SARS and MERS, a little more similar here in that they're both respiratory diseases mainly. Remind us a little bit of the history of those.
Right. Yeah. So that's, SARS was in 2002 and MERS is a similar disease. They're both actually also coronaviruses. So they have a lot in common with COVID-19 in that way. What's different about them is, again, these also didn't spread as easily. They weren't transmitted from people until they had symptoms. And even then, it wasn't as easily spread. It wasn't quite as infectious as COVID is. So you had to have pretty close contact with people to get it. They actually were more deadly than COVID is, which was a problem. But because they weren't spreading as easily, we were able to contain it a little better. We were able to deal with it sort of in hospital settings rather than having to worry about it spreading rapidly through just sort of the general public.
It almost seems like that lower fatality rate of COVID-19, which is still true, I think, as far as anybody can tell, compared to SARS or MERS or for certain Ebola, it might have made us let our guard down a little bit. It looked like with such a low percentage of people who got the disease dying from it, that made it look from a distance not as serious. Is that something you saw happening?
I think so. And there's also we're still figuring out exactly what the fatality rate is. And there's a pretty good chance that it'll actually go down from what we think it is now as we get a better understanding of just how many people have had this and didn't have severe symptoms. You know, they either had no symptoms or they had a pretty mild infection and they just weren't tested. So as we discover how many people have actually had this, that fatality rate is going to go down. But the problem is when it's so infectious, if you have enough people getting this disease, even if it has what seems like a low fatality rate of 1% or 0.5%, that ends up being a lot of people. And so we saw that to a certain extent with H1N1, because it was also very, very infectious, and it also had a pretty low fatality rate. But because so many people got it, the CDC estimates that between 151,000 and over 500,000 people died in that first year. That's a lot of people dying from this infection. And the reason why it wasn't causing the same kind of ramifications is because that fatality rate was actually even lower than what we believe COVID to be. So it's just the fact that if you have enough people getting this disease, even a low fatality rate ends up being a large number of total people.
We're talking to Kaylee Rogers from 538.com. We're talking about her piece, Why Did the World Shut Down for COVID-19, but not Ebola, SARS, or swine flu? And staying with that that swine flu H1N1, which I think I might have seen in your piece, it's related to the flu that caused the big so-called Spanish influenza epidemic of about 100 years ago. It spread quickly. That was bad. Lower fatality rate. Did it have that same sort of stealth aspect that COVID-19's virus has, that people might be carrying it and not know it?
No. So this was another thing. There was some evidence that people might have been able to spread it before they were pre-symptomatic, but it didn't seem to have as big of an impact as we're seeing with COVID-19. And especially because it seems as though people can have very mild infections where they might not have any symptoms at all, or if they do, it's not for a long time. So they're still out and about and interacting with people without even knowing that they have it. And that's sort of one of the biggest problems. We kind of had this weird, unfortunate sweet spot with COVID-19 where it is very infectious, has a relatively, impactful fatality rate, and then is also spread before you even know that you have it. And so that combination makes it really difficult to control, really hard to monitor. And that's why we need testing so badly, so we can see who's had it, where is it going, and how can we stop it.
And we still don't fully understand who it's affecting and how. And I want to turn briefly to a more recent piece you wrote. You know, we heard the most vulnerable people will be older people, which has turned out to be true, or people with other conditions. But you wrote a piece looking at some younger, healthier people who are getting COVID-19 and being severely impacted by that. What kind of things did you find out?
Right. And so that's still pretty rare. You know, the biggest groups affected are older populations, but there are, you know, a few reports of these young, otherwise healthy people having to go to hospital, having to be put in ICU, and a few cases of people actually dying from this. And so there's a lot of questions there about why is this? Why could an infection that most young people can weather just fine kill some of the population? And that's true of basically any infection. There's going to be some people in an otherwise healthy group that end up succumbing to it. But the question about why is something that they're investigating right now. So there's a lot of different potential explanations for that. One of it could be genetic. One could be the amount of virus you're exposed to when you first get infected. So if you're working in a hospital and you're dealing with patients all day, you're getting a higher exposure to that virus versus someone just, you know, touching a can in the grocery store that maybe someone sneezed on. Those are two different levels of exposure, and that might have an impact. And so there's a lot of different potential explanations that scientists are currently looking at. But unfortunately, we just don't know yet because this is so new and they're just starting these trials and trying to untangle all of that.
Given that this is such a moving target in a lot of ways, we're learning new things about this virus every week, maybe every day. What do you have your eye on now as someone who's been covering this for a couple of months?
The thing that I keep hearing repeatedly, and this is from epidemiologists, virologists, you know, people in public health, all different walks of life, is that we need to be really investing and focusing on testing. That's going to give us the best, most immediate answers and the best way to track this and try to get a control on it without having to remain in quarantine for the rest of our lives. You know, we're hoping for a vaccine someday, but that's not going to be anytime soon. And so in the meantime, the best way that we're going to be able to get any kind of information about this is if we test and test and test. And so as we hopefully start to see these new cases slow down, as we start to see the curve flatten, that should give us a bit of breathing room to start amping up those tests, testing otherwise healthy people, and getting a good sense of where we are at a population level.
Kaylee, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
You too. That's Kaylee Rogers with 538. She joined us to talk about what separates the new coronavirus from other recent outbreaks. You can find her piece linked on our website, wpr.org/centraltime.